Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. For more alternative news, come on over to thecommonsprojectnetwork.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Today we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program once again as he joins us once every other week. And Alan, he comes on with a lot of insightful information about subjects and information that is relevant to the left. Today what we will be discussing is the U.S. now a police state. And Alan, once again, I would like to welcome you to the program.
Well, thanks for having me, Stuart.
Now, Alan, we have gotten into this program several times before, but this program and what we're discussing today is so relevant because we're going about our daily lives as if nothing has changed in the last few years since 9/11. And as if nothing has changed that much in regards to our constitutional rights and freedoms since the days of the Vietnam War and since the Constitution was even written. But, Alan, our freedoms as a nation and as a people are severely under attack and really they're in jeopardy. And this is something I feel that is very relevant, even if we talked about this every week, is very relevant to the people listening to this program. And, Alan, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read this definition of a police state, and then I'm going to let you comment on this. A police state is a state in which the government exercises rigid and repressive controls over the social, economic, and political life of the population. A police state typically exhibits elements of totalitarianism and social control, and there is usually little or no distinction between the law and the exercise of political power by the executive. The inhabitants of a police state experience restrictions on their mobility and on their freedoms to express or communicate political or other views, which are subject to police monitoring or enforcement. Political control may be exerted by means of a secret police force which operates outside the boundaries normally imposed by a constitutional state. Alan, seemed like we're already there.
Well, I think we've been living in a police state in this country for quite a while, Stuart, even before I was born it began. And, you know, this has been steadily progressing over the years to the point where we are today. And capitalist society in our country has always sort of been right on the edge of a so-called democracy and a fascism. Obviously, we don't have fascism like in Nazi Germany in our country today, but I think it is correct to say that we live in a very highly orchestrated police state. Many people don't notice what the police are doing and the various agencies, what they do, but we've all become aware of what the National Security Administration is doing to monitor our telephone conversations, literally the conversations of just about every single person in this country and around the world. I mean, we've seen where, you know, the National Security Agency is even monitoring the phone calls of foreign leaders, even leaders that are sympathetic
Merkel.
To the United States and U.S. imperialism.
Right.
Yeah, Merkel in Germany, and who knows
right.
how many other foreign leaders. If they would monitor the phone conversations of Merkel in Germany, we can be sure
right.
they're monitoring the phone conversations of most foreign leaders in the world today. And, you know, we're in a very dangerous situation in this country. It really took a sharp turn towards the police state with the COINTELPRO programs, the counterintelligence program of the FBI back in the 1950s, and it's been progressing ever since then. And today we have the FBI and the CIA and the National Security Administration working together with quasi-governmental organizations and businesses which are involved in spying on the American people. You have outfits like the Altegrity USIS, which is a massive private detective agency that hires FBI laid off and retired FBI agents and CIA agents to do their dirty work, and their main thing is to sort out what they consider labor union advocates, apply for jobs, and this is one of their main functions. You know, this is what's taking place here in the United States, and most people don't even know they're being investigated by these agencies. And these agencies have no restrictions. They're not covered under the Constitution or anything else because it's claimed that they're private businesses. So we're in a very dangerous situation in this country today. You know, we saw where the FBI, on Obama's orders, sent over 500 FBI agents in to occupy Wall Street to disrupt and disorient this movement of people that were just plain fed up.
It was peaceful.
With, what Wall Street is doing in our country and around the world.
Right. And
these
this is typical
doing
what
illegal.
Happens in a police state.
Exactly.
And
we
Alan,
have almost every city in this country has what they call red squads, every major city, and even some of the smaller cities. Yeah, and these are organizations, units of the local police, the state police, and the FBI. And their sole purpose, the reason they're called red squads, is because their involvement is to spy on people that they consider radicals and red socialists and communists. And this is their
and part
purpose.
Of what they do is they infiltrate those groups and radicals so that they can be able to secretly investigate them.
Right. J. Edgar Hoover stated the intent, and that was to undermine these organizations and to do things to make them look like you know, they didn't have any real reason to be protesting or that they didn't have any right to protest wars of aggression, imperialist wars of aggression, or to initiate activities to correct the racist problems that we have in this country. You know, Martin Luther King was spied on constantly his entire life, day in and day out, 24 hours a day. And, you know, the FBI freely admits this now. And,
well, what they were doing is they were spying on just a few people then. Now they're spying on everybody.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't just a few people, Stuart. It was millions of people.
Well,
that
I say a few. It wasn't to the magnitude that it is today. Technology has taken it completely to a different level.
And they're using the modern digital and electronic technology to do that. And this should concern every single person. You know, we've got to put an end to this. We need some kind of massive organization in this country to defend the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of this country. There is no organization to do that at the very time that the government of this country is undermining the Constitution and the Bill of Rights left and right in this country. You know, especially these
documents. How do you deal with it, Alan, when you can't even recognize the government anymore? I mean, we say we need to do something about it, but, Alan, I don't even recognize this government. It's like I'm living in a foreign country.
Exactly. And this is why the people have to rise up and take control back of their own country. I mean, we've got to this is all Wall Street's doings, and it's to protect Wall Street's interests and assets that these police agencies act. You know, way back in at the turn of the century, you had the Molly Maguires. And the Pinkertons went in to disrupt their organizing efforts to achieve a little social justice and economic justice, and the Pinkertons framed these people. And the Pinkertons were, essentially, they worked hand-in-hand with the United States government. There wasn't an FBI back then, but the government was using the Pinkerton Detective Agency to undermine the efforts of working people to attain a semblance of justice. And, you know, that went on until the FBI was organized in the early 1900s. Their first efforts were to begin deporting people because of their political beliefs, you know. And this has expanded many, many times since then to the point where, you know, if you write a letter to the editor, your name is going to be placed in a file, and you're going to be labeled a red if you write a letter for peace and social justice and for civil rights. And these red squads are going to start coming after you, and they're going to start spying on you. They're going to start taking your picture, and they're going to start taking pictures of people that come to your home. They're going to start questioning your neighbors about you. You know, I have that all the time with the FBI. Up here in northern Minnesota, the FBI agents, they come in these vans, you know, three or four FBI agents at a time, and they start going through the neighborhood asking people questions about me. Most people think it's funny, but a lot of people, it scares. And that's their intent, to scare and intimidate and make it known to people that if they voice their opinions, they're going to receive the same kind of harassment.
Alan, I just want to focus on a trip that I took over the weekend. I went to New York over the weekend for the convention for the Socialist Party USA. And it's two things I want to focus on. I want to focus a little bit on that trip, and I just want to focus on what I do every day when I just go to work. But when I was ready leaving from San Diego, first of all, I leave home, and at every street you have the streetlights. You have cameras at every streetlight, and I don't know what it's like in Minnesota, but at every street you have a camera that's watching that entire intersection. Every building that you see, and I'm just talking about approximately 85 miles to the airport, every building have cameras mounted everywhere. When I'm on my way to make my trip to the airport, they have border patrol every 2 to 5 miles where they're on both sides of the freeway. They got lights. Alan, they got lights on both sides of the freeway where they're mounted on the top of their vehicles. They got unmarked trucks, they got cars, they got all kinds of vehicles that you can't identify that they're border patrols. But when you see the bright lights, and then plus you have to go through the border patrol station, you get to the airport, they got cameras everywhere. Police are up front to greet you. You get inside, they got the airport police. You have to go through the security section where they make you strip down, take off your belts, take off your shoes. These are things that people experience, Alan, every day. Take off your shoes. Take everything out of your pocket. Don't leave even tissue in your pockets. And then everyone is just completely, I mean, you're rendered, like, helpless, where now you have to stand in a machine, and this machine is, you know, just invading your privacy. And then you have to, you know, after disrobing, then you have to put your clothes and your garments and everything back together. And then you're sitting there in the terminal, and now you got cameras above you everywhere searching every move, and then you have the police, the airport police everywhere. Alan, how much worse is a police state? I mean, I didn't go in the airport. I didn't even go a few feet. Going there to the airport, I couldn't even go like 2 miles where I see police everywhere. Alan, it's a police state. That's what I see.
Yeah, I see the same thing, Stuart. And I think a lot of people are beginning to see that, and they're wondering what can be done to stop this. You know, where does this lead? I think we all know pretty much where it's going to lead. It's going to lead to people being arrested for their political views.
That's what it's getting to.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to, they're going to continue to, you know, like put a noose around our neck and make it so we can't even talk anymore. And, you know, that's their intent. They don't want people to voice their opinions, because when people start voicing their opinions, what is being expressed is that people are thoroughly fed up with what's going on in this country, and they want to silence that. And that's the intent of the police state, to silence people just being fed up with what's going on in this country. People are fed up with the wars. They're fed up with unemployment. They're fed up with poverty. They're fed up with the poverty wages and, you know, all these different problems. If you go out and talk to people, there isn't, you know, it's hard to find a person that doesn't have a problem. And these are real problems that people are experiencing, not just individual problems, but these so-called individual problems are the problems now of millions of people. And they're doing everything possible to prevent people from having a conversation about what it's going to take to solve these problems. Just go out and try and find a hall to meet in. You know, it used to be easy to find a church or a library community meeting room that was always free.
It was almost impossible.
A school classroom you could always get for free. Now you can't. It's $100, $200, $300. You know,
forget about
you
had to get permits. You had to get permits and state what the meeting is going to be about, and then they have to take it to some other committee to approve whether or not you're even going to have the meeting.
Yeah, and they always make the police aware that the meeting is going to take place. You know, this is your police state, and the police are there. They send informants into the meeting. Some of the informants are sent there to collect information on who's there. Other informants are sent to disrupt the meeting. You know, this is not democracy. This, like you say, it's a police state. The police are in control, and police are being trained how to do this. They're even bringing in so-called community leaders to assist them in doing this. Here
right.
in Minnesota, they picked up hundreds of business leaders at local airports in military helicopters and transported them to Camp Ripley, a big military base here, and they had a big day-long discussion about what to do and how to handle things when they get out of control, when the people begin to rebel. You know,
right.
how the police and these so-called community leaders were going to be able to work together to keep everything under control and maintain power. You know, and that's what this is all about. They're worried. They're worried that people will take Thomas Jefferson's words about the right to rebellion at face value. They're worried that
right.
people are going to believe the words in the Constitution of the United States and that they will actually try to exercise their rights that are there in the Bill of Rights. This is what
right.
they're worried about.
Right. Right. And as you mentioned, they're worried about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that people will exercise those rights. Because now even members in Congress are saying, they're not rights. Those are privileges.
Yeah,
there
exactly.
is a difference, Alan. There is a difference between having a constitutional right or privilege. One, you have a right to. One is something that someone is giving you the privilege to you to use. The other one is a right that's guaranteed.
Yes, people won these rights. They struggled hard for the rights under the Bill of Rights and the Constitution.
Exactly.
You know, we had a revolution against the British monarchy to achieve those rights, and now slowly but surely they're taking away all these rights and reverting to something worse than what the British Crown even had in place in this country, you know, several hundred years ago. You know, this is, and it's going to continue. If people think that there's going to be any reversal of moving in the direction of this police to higher and higher levels, they're badly mistaken, because it's going to continue. As the problems in our society get worse, the people in power are going to continue to try and control people, and when they can't control their minds and people start to go out into the streets and demand, you know, real social and economic justice, the police are going to be there to beat people down,
Alan,
people down.
Alan, we're going to look at certain ways that we can see also that we are living in a police state. As I mentioned in the information that I posted where people could tune into the program, today we see police departments arming up nationwide. I just a few days ago, I went into the car wash to have my car cleaned up, and there were two squad cars in there to have their cars cleaned up, and you should have seen the munitions and the weapons that these police officers were taking out of their cars before they sent their car through the wash. I mean, you would think that they were ready to they were ready for some crowd control or something like that. But Alan, police departments Now they have body armor and the way they hit the streets, they look like they're just getting ready for crowd control. Ellen, I mean, we see it in almost every police department across the country, where it's not like they're there to protect and to serve, but they're there to assault.
Well, exactly. At the Republican National Convention, when it was held in St. Paul in the Twin Cities, there was a big march against the Republican Party, and participating in that march was the mayor of Minneapolis and his wife, and I was walking right next to Mayor Rybek and his wife, and these cops were so well-armed, and the body armor that they had was the scariest thing you could, you know, think of. And his Mayor Rybek's own wife turned to him and said, "My God, what kind of monsters did you bring into our community?" And that's
right.
Just what they look like, monsters, and that's what they are, monsters. They were batting their billy clubs in their hand like they just wanted to bash somebody's head in, you know. And this is how these police acted. And in every community where there's been demonstrations, I hear the same thing, that the police are decked out in the same kind of body armor, the riot helmets, the riot gear. Their body armor is even ventilated and, you know, during the summer, and has air conditioning. You know, these are very vicious people. What kind of people would even put on this kind of body armor and stand there and face people that are just marching down the street with protest signs? You know, nobody was involved in any kind of violence or anything. The only violence that took place, we found out later that it was the police had hired people to create the violence. So, you know,
right.
the police have to create the violence. They have to pay people to create this violence in order to justify what they're doing in this country. The American people are peaceful people. They don't want war
right.
abroad, and they don't want to have to go out in the streets and fight and throw stones and, you know, shoot and get shot at by their own police or their military, you know, like at Kent State, where the military shot people down in cold blood in a premeditated way. It was planned. And you can bet that the police are making plans for the same kinds of activities in our country today. Always the police they create some kind of pretext to use violence against the people. And this has gone on and on for, you know, decades now. There was a report issued. It was called the Family Jewels, a joint report by the FBI and the CIA. And this was all brought out before the Church Commission when Senator Frank Church was investigating all this police state monkey business. You know, it was found out that the police, local police, the county police, and the state police and the FBI and all these other police agencies were all conspiring against the people to deprive people of their constitutional rights, because the people were protesting against the Vietnam War and demanding civil rights in this country. And, you know, millions upon millions of dollars, we don't
right.
even know how much is being spent to oppress and suppress the American people from speaking out. And, you know, what do they want to speak out about? That they want peace, that they want social and economic justice. These have become crimes in our country. To stand there with a sign at a federal building, you can be arrested. You know, and this has been enshrined into law, a blatant violation
right.
of the First Amendment. And yet the Congress of the United States passed this law almost unanimously. You know, these people,
right,
have
exactly.
power. They have no respect
people,
at all for the Bill of Rights or the Constitution.
Alan, most Americans don't even realize that they have actually lost their First Amendment rights in this country. The First Amendment doesn't mean anything as far as you having a right in this country anymore.
No.
And as you mentioned, it was passed by this Congress.
Yeah. And every day we hear of instances where the police, they call it, you know, overstepping their boundaries. But this isn't something that just happens. This is part of a whole process that's taking place in this country where the police think that they can, you know, just use their authority to tell somebody you can't pass out a leaflet on a street corner, that,
right.
you know, you can't stand there with a sign. There was a Native American leader that was arrested in the Mall of America. He was sitting there drinking coffee. after a Idle No More demonstration, and the mall police told him he had to leave. He wasn't doing anything. He wasn't hurting anybody. And yet they took him to court and charged him with trespassing because he wouldn't get up and leave when the police told him to. His only crime
right.
was sitting there drinking coffee. And because he was Native, you know, they told him he had to leave because of the Idle No More demonstration. And,
right.
you know, it's not even common sense anymore when the police can act in this manner. To think that you can arrest somebody for sitting there drinking coffee when that person has not done anything else, you know, anything illegal at all. His only crime was not to move when the police ordered him to. Never should have ordered him to move in the first place.
Right. The other thing I'm looking at that you have to consider, Alan, are the U.S. jails and prisons are overcrowded. We have one out of every 100 Americans, one out of every 100 persons living in this country are incarcerated in jail or prison, Alan. One out of 100.
Right.
Alan, we have almost 2 million that are in the federal prison system. 2 million.
Well,
the prison and
jail system is a big business.
Yeah, it's big business. And here in states such as California, we have over 33 prisons, state prisons here in California, and under the previous governor, Schwarzenegger, he wanted to open up another 8 prisons. And the prisons that they have are more than twice, they're holding 3 times of what the capacity is for those prisons. But, Alan, we see this across the country, and we saw the same thing in other countries. We even saw this in Germany, where they were filling up concentration camps, and they had people on top of people. But,
right.
Alan, it's like they're preparing for a state where a mass incarceration. We see this in California. We see it across the nation. Could you speak on that?
Well, I had my own personal experience with a county jail. I was arrested last year on charges that never should have been brought in the first place, and the charges were dropped. But when I was arrested and booked, I was taken to the county jail, and they couldn't even put me in a cell without having me step over people that were laying on the floors, and the cement floors in the hallways. The jail was so overcrowded. And this was a little rural county jail, and there were literally people laying in the cement hallways, you know, body to body. You couldn't even walk to a jail cell without stepping on somebody. And you hear about this all over the country. I was to a meeting in Grand Rapids, Michigan, about 3 weeks ago, where they were talking about prison reform, and people were talking about the horrendous conditions in the state prisons, so overcrowded. You know, they're inhumane conditions, and what does this foster? It fosters violence in the jails. It fosters racism. It fosters the worst kind of human indignities. And, you know, many of these people, probably maybe even most of the people, shouldn't even be in jail to start with. If they
right.
were rich enough to have expensive, high-powered attorneys, for sure they would never be in a prison, you know.
Right.
So, The solution to the unemployment problem is to imprison a whole bunch of people in this country,
mm-hmm.
and this is what they're doing. It's you know, all facets of a police state. You can't have this country has so many people in prison. It's unbelievable, and then you give people a record, and they can't get a job and they get out.
Let's compare it to China. We have more people in prison here in China than what they have in China, and China's population is more than 4 times the size of the population here in the U.S. But we have more people in prison. 25% of the people that are incarcerated worldwide are here in this country.
Yep. And
there's something wrong with that picture.
Well, we have 5%
of the world's population. Huh?
Well, the reason for that is that from the time they arrest you, they start making money. They charge
right,
you a
exactly.
booking fee. The minute they bring you into a county jail, they charge you a booking fee. Then they charge you for every night you stay in that jail cell. you know, and that goes on and on. And they charge people for jail cells in the state prisons. And, you know, somebody is making a whole lot of money. They to make a telephone call from a jail, that it used to be where, you know, it used to be hard to make a telephone call. Now, oh, yeah, go ahead and use the phone all you want. Because if you talk for 4 minutes on a telephone, it ends up costing you around $20 from any county jail or state prison. You know, somebody's making a lot of money in this whole prison system, and nobody wants to talk about any of this. This is all part of the police state. It's all profits being made from a police state. You know, all these uniforms that these cops are decked out in at demonstrations, how much do these uniforms cost? Who's making the money off of these uniforms? You know, the body armor, having to ventilate these body armor systems because they're so closed and provide air conditioning and everything for them. This is costing taxpayers a fortune, you know. People aren't being prosecuted. They should be looking at the Wall Street criminals and going after those people and not the people out in the streets that are protesting the problems that Wall Street has created.
And when we look at, these prisons, you know, the prisons basically, as you mentioned, that's part of the prison industrial complex where it is actually creating billions and billions of dollars for private corporations that are owned by Wall Street. Alan, I just want to mention very briefly, we have Alan Mackey. He's joining our program once again. He joins the program every other week. And today what we're discussing is the U.S. now a police state? Is the U.S. now a police state? And as Alan has already mentioned, we've been a police state for some time. Alan, when I look at some of the things that also indicate that we're a police state, and you just mentioned very briefly about the way that the heads of states are being spied on by this government. We have our cell phones, Alan. Every time you pick up your cell phone, you and myself in particular, every time we turn our phone on, we're being monitored. Your
right.
cell phones are used to detect where you are located, when you go home and when you go to sleep, when you wake up, who are you talking to, the contents, everything that you're discussing. Alan, your credit cards, your automobile, when you get into your automobile to go somewhere, most people don't realize your automobiles can be used to, they can monitor the systems in your car. They can let you
right.
know where you're located. They can open your car and lock your car from any location. You can have your car started from any location around the world. Alan, these are things that they can also use to detect where you're located. Automobiles are used as tracking devices. We are being tracked by devices in our homes. Every time you turn on the television, a lot of people don't realize years ago you had an antenna. Well, you couldn't track someone with an antenna. But
right.
now you have to have a box where the box can be used to track everything that you're watching. It can be the length of time that you watch everything, but also it can be used as a means of tracking who is there in that house at that time. Alan, it even gets worse. They can be able to tell your usage of water and electricity. When you turn on your gas, when you turn your gas off in your house, Alan, everything, your personal lives have been totally, totally invaded in this country. So when I was making a comparison of what they had in Germany wasn't quite that bad.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing is they're even monitoring what people read. They're monitoring the books that people take out of the libraries. And,
right.
And
their taxes? Because I see people all the time. They're reading books and information, and they're receiving taxes all the time. Unfortunately, you see
yeah.
people receiving taxes when they're going down the freeway doing 80 miles an hour and sending taxes back. But, Alan, they're monitoring every text that you're sending out. And,
exactly.
And this was the main threat that they had with Edward Snowden. That was the main threat. That was the main threat that they had with Chelsea Manning. Those were the threats because they were revealing that we have a government that has the nation under total surveillance. Alan, have you seen anything like this anywhere else in the world?
No, I don't think there ever has been anything like this anyplace else in the world. This is a very advanced police state that we're living in, and the whole intent is to prevent the people from having a say in the decision-making process. And it's, I don't know, you know, what people are going to have to do, but people are going to have to take some kind of initiative to put an end to this. I think that the main initiative is going to have to be to elect a whole new kind of government in this country. And we got to challenge Wall Street for power. You know, I've said that time and time again. If we don't challenge Wall Street for power, for political and economic power, you know, we're going to lose everything that's been fought for over the years in this country. We're going to lose all that and much more, including, you know, our constitutional rights and our rights under the Bill of Rights. On December 10th, the world is going to be celebrating the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. There's about 30 rights articulated in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Every one of those rights is being trampled upon by the United States government, inflicting, you know, this harm on its own people, and not to mention the rest of the world. People are being treated as criminals because they want what's articulated in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, their most basic and fundamental human rights, something that Eleanor Roosevelt helped to craft and shape, and that the entire world agrees that these are fundamental and basic human rights that everybody born is entitled to by birth. And, you know, this government wants to ignore all this and trample on these rights. It's, you know, the government's going goose-stepping backwards in the footprints of Joe McCarthy almost every day in this country right now. And Obama has slammed people for being liberals and progressives, and yet he came to power on the basis that he wanted people to think that he was liberal and progressive. Once he got into the presidency, you know, he changed his tune, and all of a sudden liberals and progressives and leftists became his enemies.
Alan, I want to read this statement from Daniel Ellsberg, and he was the man who leaked the Pentagon Papers in 1971. And he said, "We have not only the capacity of a police state, but certain beginnings of it right now." And then this was in the Huffington Post. And then this is his statement, and I absolutely agree with Edward Snowden. It's worth a person's life, prospects of assassination, or life in prison, or life in exile. It's worth that to try to restore our liberties and make this a democratic country. What comment would you have on that?
Well, I would agree with
that. I absolutely agree with it.
Yeah, me too.
But see, the thing is, what you're saying about people rising up against what is taking place, that's what it takes. But share your thoughts on it.
Well, I think we know that this country has gone so far that to straighten out the problems, that people are going to end up dying in the struggle to correct the situation. You know, one thing when we talk about, you know, you were talking about how well-armed the police are and everything. I think one thing that doesn't come out enough is that these cops, they talk about using rubber bullets against protesters and everything. These are the same so-called rubber bullets that were used in Northern Ireland by the British there to put the people down, and they were used in South Africa. But these are not mere rubber bullets like they would like us to believe. These are rubber-covered steel bullets. And
they can create a lot of damage.
Oh, lots and lots of damage. And, you know, I don't know why people don't bring this out more, that these are rubber-covered steel bullets. They're not just, you know, like some kind of something shot from one of these Nerf guns or something that isn't going to hurt you. These are very dangerous bullets, and you know they can kill people, they can maim people, they can damage people's brains if they're hit in the head. They can shoot out eyes, and the police think nothing about firing these so-called rubber bullets into crowds of protesters here in the United States. Now, this has happened time and time again. It happened here in Minneapolis. The police used these so-called rubber bullets. It happened out in California. It's been happening all over the country. And, what's going to result is the same thing that happened at Kent State and Jackson State. And we're going to end up with, maybe dozens of people being killed in some demonstration because of these cops that think they can do whatever they want to people now and get away with it. This is what's been the atmosphere that's been created. You have this whole right wing that's generated this atmosphere, and the police are right in there. You have people in the police departments that are members of the Ku Klux Klan and the John Birch Society and all these right wing organizations. They're right in there with the National Rifle Association, and this is the temperament and the mentality of the police in this country right now. And these are the same police that are spying on people, and they will think nothing about killing people, because
what I'm going to do is I want to get in a little bit about our program last week, because I would like to get some of your comments on that. But, Alan, and last week we were talking about left unity. Is it possible? And then we're going to talk get your comments on that. But, Alan, when I look at President Obama, and he was elected by a clear majority of the people in this country. Even Republicans were voting for him back in 2008. And here was a president was talking about transparency. This president has taken us further away from democracy than any other president in the last 150 years. And there is just a blatant disregard of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, a blatant disregard of human rights, a blatant disregard of the rights of other foreign governments, a blatant disregard when it comes to the privacy of individuals and other nations. Alan, I mean, is this what they were expecting back in 2008 and when they reelected President Obama in 2012? Is this what the nation was what they were expecting? Whatever happened to transparency?
Well, there is no transparency in the Obama administration. Everything is done behind closed doors and out of sight, where the American people don't know what's going on with anything. A perfect example of that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And you talk about a police state. They're even talking about moving NATO into the Pacific region in order to control and have complete control under this Trans-Pacific Partnership. In other words, if people rise up and rebel against it, you're going to have NATO there to shoot people down. Who would ever thought that NATO would be moved into the Pacific region? But it's being moved to the Pacific region right along with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we don't even know what's in this agreement. Only about 600 corporate lobbyists know what's in this agreement, and they've created this agreement completely, in the dark. The American people know nothing about it, and this is part of the police state. And
the
Trans-Pacific
Partnership is absolute control. That's what it is.
Yeah.
They can operate outside the boundaries of U.S. law. They operate outside the boundaries of international law. And most people don't even know what it's all about. And we need to discuss that in one of our future programs. But, Alan, I'd just like for you to give your last comment on this. And then I want to just get a little bit into that program we had last week. What are some of your last comments that you would like to add on is this now a police state?
Well, I think that it is a police state that we're living in right now, and I think that the only way we're going to be able to combat it is through creating some kind of large organization, a national organization, some kind of committee to defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. We need some kind of organization like that more than ever in this should be sued left and right. They should be taken into the courts. The FBI should be sued for what they did to Occupy Wall Street. And the National Security Administration should be sued for spying on people through their telephones. You know, these are just court cases waiting to happen, and these court cases will explain to the American people what is going on. Things will become transparent through suing these government agencies that are engaged in this kind of conduct. So, you know, I think that's the direction we need to be moving in. And we need to be very vigorous in stating our opinions and speaking out when it comes to issues of peace and social and economic justice. And we can't allow these police, these monsters, to deter us from speaking out and having our say and trying to get a voice in the decision-making process.
Alan, I hope you're right that there is some hope where we can create some type sense of unity. Not sense of unity. We need unity where we can be able to deal with this, because most of the people in this country, they don't realize the nation that they saw 50 years ago is, they wouldn't recognize it if they could really just understand what was taking place. It's a different country. We talk about sheeps and wolves. Let's talk about sheeps and dragons. So it's a big difference now. Alan, in our last 10 minutes, I just want to talk a little bit about our program last week, and we had Stephen Katz. He joined us talking about left unity. Is it possible? And you have been on a mission for several years now to create unity on the left. And you have been doing this through an organization. It's the New Progressive Alliance. I would like for you to share, what is the New Progressive Alliance? And then the same question that I proposed to Stephen Katz, I would like to ask you the same thing. Left unity, is it really possible? But what is the New Progressive Alliance? And what is the mission?
Well, our mission is to create more than just left unity, but unity on the part of the American people for solving the problems that we're confronting, for peace, for full employment, for protection of our environment. We sort of look at this that, we live in a country of 300 million people, so it's only sort of natural that we're going to have, a number of different organizations on the left, because if you think about it, people get their ideas and stuff based on their position in life and what they do for a living and everything else, and it's only natural and normal that there be a number of different organizations, and we're never going to have a merger of all these organizations, but what we can come together on is issues. And this is what I think is very important. You know, we need to be talking about working class unity. We will never merge into one organization on the left. A lot of people seem to think that's a possibility. I know I heard discussion in your program that, the Communist Party and the Committees of Correspondence and the Freedom Road Socialist Organization were talking about uniting and merging into one big left organization. But, I don't think we need to be going in that direction. I think we need to be going in the direction where the left becomes a catalyst for change. And Stephen, your guest last week, talked a little bit about that. But I think it's very important that we see the left as the catalyst, bringing forward solutions to problems and pushing progressives and liberals to join with us to build, huge, huge movements for the kinds of change that we need in this country. And that's the kind of unity, that the New Progressive Alliance is seeking, unity around issues and problems and the solutions to the problems. And, we can remain in different organizations and, people will have a little different view on this or that ideological point of view. But on the basic problems that the American people face, we got to come together and bring forward and become a catalyst for the solutions to those problems. That's where we want left unity to be going, I think, and where we want it headed.
Now, I want to ask you about the lead. Continue.
It doesn't hurt anything for there to be 40 or 100 or 200 left organizations or parties. The important thing is that these organizations and parties are bringing forward solutions to the American problems, American people's problems that we can all agree we have to unite around. That's the point of left unity I think we need to be concerned about.
Well, Alan, part of what we're going to see in 2016, we're going to see Hillary Clinton talk about the same nonsense about how the Democrats, how they see a clear direction and how they want to unify the left against the Republicans, because the Republicans have been trying to destroy the health care that we have. The Republicans have been trying to take away Social Security. We always have, during an election year, all this nonsense of, you know, creating the other guy as being the evil guy. But we know that they're the twin parties of evil. But,
right.
Alan, how are we going to get past that where people don't fall into that same trap in 2016, the same trap they fall into every 4 years, and believing that Hillary or any other Democrat is going to pave a new way to create unity, which we can see that that is nothing but a lie?
Well, I think
where
people
do we,
are going to
where
have
do we
to...
start? Because we're right now, I want to find out how many of the leaders that you have of these various groups and organizations and presidential candidates are still supporting what you were doing during 2012 and before.
Well, I think that most of them are still supporting what we tried to do, is to bring people together around the 10-point program. And more people are coming aboard. And I think that, you know, when we go out to people, and we are reaching out to people across the country right now and telling people, you know, consider what we have here in our 10-point program, and don't vote for candidates who won't support this. People are coming to understand that, you know, we're not going to go any place with Democrats, for sure not with the Republicans, and that what we need to do now is we need to articulate what kind of country we actually want to live in. And we need to state that, we need to put it in writing, and we need to sign our names to it, just like the people signed their names to the Declaration of Independence. They stated what they didn't want and what they did want, and we got to do the same thing now. We got to declare our independence from Wall Street and Wall Street's two parties, the Democrats and Republicans, and we got to do it in a way that we explain what kind of society we want, because the right wing is going to be pushing on a lot of these problems, and it's going to sound logical to a lot of people and make common sense. And in the end, the right wing is only using these issues to drag people down the wrong road. The left is going to have to create a statement that allows people to define what kind of country we want to live in, a country at peace and cooperation with the rest of the world, a country where we have full employment and real living wages and living incomes for everybody. You know, this is the richest country in the world, and we can achieve that. And we've got to state it in uncertain terms that this is the kind of country we want, and that we're going to run candidates for political office that are going to support this the kind of country we want to build.
Alan, how are we going to hold this Congress, this president, how are we going to hold the leadership accountable and make them accountable to the Constitution, that they must live under the same Constitution that we live under? Because right now, this Congress, the leadership of this nation, the Constitution doesn't mean anything to them. They only do what their leaders on Wall Street tell them to do, and that's it. But how do we
do that?
Do we need to rewrite the Constitution? Do we need to have a people's Constitution? How do we hold them accountable?
Well, I think the Constitution and Bill of Rights we have is fine, and what we need to do
and
is...
And I agree with you there.
We need to stress that part of the Constitution and Bill of Rights is also the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and
right.
I would encourage everybody on December 10th, the anniversary of the UN Declaration of Human Rights, to have some kind of action and activity on that day to explain the most basic and fundamental human rights that exist, the right to a job, the right to live in peace, the right to be free from racist discrimination, you know, the right to be free from sexist discrimination, the right to have a decent home to live in, the right to a decent living income, and the right to a job. All these things are basic human rights that You know, millions of people in this country are being denied, and, you know, many more millions of people around the world are being denied as a result of Wall Street and Bay Street and the Square Mile in England and all these other financial centers controlling and manipulating the economies of the world. And we got to stress that, you know, we need to break free from this kind of economic domination on the part of the wealthy and the powerful and the corporations. And, you know, we need to push people to become part of organizations that are going to work to solve these problems. Only through organization do we have a chance to confront these people and build for real change. And without organization, we can't do anything. And this is what we've got to stress, and we've got to start bringing people together, whether it's a few people in a living room here and there, or, you know, filling auditoriums, talking to people about and letting people express what they think are the solutions to the problems. But people have to take an active part in the decision-making process, and they're going to have to assert themselves in one way or another, whether it's writing letters to the editor or getting out on the street petitioning or holding signs and demonstrations and marches and protests, you know, or going on strike.
Well,
people are going to have to do something.
A lot of people don't understand that they're very close to the point where when you write those letters, when you have those meetings, and those demonstrations, when you hold those signs, you're very close to the point where they're going to just apprehend you, lock you up, and throw away the key. We're that close. And Alan, I appreciate you bringing all of this to the attention of our listeners and sharing your expertise. You've been doing this for close to 45 years, and we appreciate you sharing. Alan, we have around another minute and a half. Could you just give some contact information, how people can be able to reach you? And I just want to say very quickly, we will not be on next week, but we'll be on the following week, and we'll be coming back with Alan Mackey during that time period. But next week, we will not be having a program. Alan, how can people reach you?
Okay, they can Google my name, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll come across my blog, the Podunk blog, and all my contact information, telephone number 218-386-2432. My email address and everything is right on the blog. They can contact me that way. I'd just like to say, Stuart, in closing, that, you know, the people that fought to free our country from British rule, you know, they faced very severe punishment too. Ben Franklin and Thomas Paine, they could have been hung for, you know, distributing leaflets in newspapers. And, you know, we shouldn't be afraid, you know, for our lives for doing the same thing.
And I appreciate it. And you do that every day. And again, Alan, I want to thank you for joining the program. I always like to thank Ruth Ann Amatafio. She helps to bring this program to our listeners every week. And as I mentioned, we will not be on next week, but we will be on the following week. And again, thanks for joining the Socialist Insight. Alan, thanks again, and thank you, Ruth Ann. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.